Okay, welcome to September 19th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and one of the reasons why I do this show is because of the men and women serving in the military. If you are serving, or if you have ever served, thank you. Unfortunately, I don't have much more than that to offer you, except for maybe a Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson pencil or a shot glass. So hopefully this podcast will show you my appreciation. I put together this podcast in a tool shed in my backyard in La Mesa, California, right next to San Diego. If you're looking to move to the area, or if you already live here, but you have some questions about real estate, check out TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. Because as a full-service Encinitas and San Diego real estate professional, Teresa works with buyers, sellers, and investors in real estate transactions. So check it out, TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. Then give her a call. Area code 619-507-4906. And let's begin the show as we normally do with the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags if we have one, and put our right hand over our hearts and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. America! And now moving on to today's headlines. President Washington gives his farewell address. The Unabomber Manifesto shows up in print, and the Dow peaks for the last time before the stock market crash. All right, so now here I go. 1796. Washington gives his farewell address, and good freaking riddance, American people. No offense. Love you, mean it, gotta go. That's actually not what he said, but no doubt that's what he was thinking. George Washington reluctantly served two terms for his fellow man, the first one simply because America needed a leader, and the second to bridge the gap between evolving political parties. Washington would be the only president to ever classify himself as a nonpartisan. Now the election of 1796 was looming, America would have to figure out how to deal with two different political parties. The Federalists, with incumbent Vice President John Adams, and the Democratic Republicans, led in the campaign by former Secretary of State Thomas Jefferson and New York Senator Aaron Burr. The Federalists, who favored a strong central government and questioned Alexander Hamilton's Bank of the United States, were popular in the northern states, especially New England states. They believed in good relations with Britain and came up with Jay's Treaty, which encouraged trade with them. I cover Jay's Treaty a lot more on my August 18th ep, but anyway, many of those northern states, Connecticut, Delaware, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, Vermont, and South Carolina, the electors were chosen by state legislatures, which meant that the party that controlled the state legislature controlled the selection of the state's electors. In this election, everyone ran alone. There were no running mates. Adams ran alone, and so did Jefferson and Burr, even though they were running for the same party. Democratic Republicans, who favored states' rights, were popular in the rural American South, who, by the by, hated Jay's Treaty, just like the French hated it. The Democratic Republicans didn't care what the British wanted. For the election of 1796, Virginia, North Carolina, Maryland, and Kentucky voters in each district were able to vote for one elector. Strict interpretation of the Constitution was another trait of the Democratic Republican Party, so when Adams got the most votes overall with 71 for the Federalists, the Duke of Braintree was stuck working this gig with his arch nemesis, the Apostle of the Constitution, Pen of the Revolution, Father of the Declaration of Independence, and Sage of Monticello, Long Tom Jefferson, who got 68 electoral votes. Second place. According to the Constitution, which was written before those party lines existed, made it clear that number one and number two would have to spend the next 4 years figuring it out. Key word, four. Jefferson would oust his so-called boss in 1800, which I get into on my December 3rd ep. Let me just say, that would never happen again in American history. Never would a first and second be allowed to serve side by side, coming in from opposing parties. If Washington had not refused a third term and give it another 4 years, even the father of his country couldn't resolve the differences of his children. No wonder he wanted to retire 8 years earlier with his lovely wife, Martha. But George had to do this, and he took it as far as he could. And even he couldn't stop the rise of the American political parties. And in creeper news, 1995, the Unabomber's manifesto shows up in print in the New York Times and Washington Post. Ted Kaczynski was born on May 22, 1942 in Chicago, Illinois. He understood numbers better than just about anybody, but couldn't understand technology for some reason. This shouldn't sound surprising, but Ted the Unabomber Kaczynski taught at UC Berkeley for a couple years before he quit, where no doubt he fit right in. He moved to a reclusive lifestyle in the woods of Montana, and between 1975 and 1995, Kaczynski mailed bombs to universities and airlines throughout America, killing 3 and injuring 23 more. In a letter to the Times and Post, Kaczynski stated that the killings would stop if the paper printed his 35,000-word rant about the problems with modern technology and blah, blah, blah. Ted's brother David read it and recognized his brother's style of writing and tipped him off to the FBI. These days, Kaczynski is rotting at the Florence Federal Correctional Complex in Colorado, where he belongs. 1929. The Dow peaks for the last time until the crash. So much for the Federal Reserve doing its function, which was to prevent collapses in the market. In 1920, the Fed raised the money supply to help bail Europe out of World War I expenses. When inflation resulted from this, the Fed raised interest rates, causing a recession and leaving the farming industry in a hole. In 1921, the Fed lowered the rates, leading to more inflation, and put a stop on that inflation in 1923 by tightening credit and then lowered the rate to the discount window, luring in banks to borrow new reserves. On and on this went throughout the 20s. As author Arthur Schlesinger pointed out in The Crisis of the Old Order, the U.S. government encourages, quote, tax policies that contributed to oversaving, monetary policies that were expansive when prices were raising, and deflationary when prices began to fall, tariff policies that left foreign loans as the only prop for the export trade, and policies towards monopoly which fostered economic concentration, introduced rigidity into the market and anesthetized the price system, unquote. And so, by this point, New York bankers were retrieving their 24-hour call loans, and investors had to dump their stock into the market so they could pay off those loans. Naturally, the crash occurred not much longer after that. To be continued. And so that's going to wrap it up for September 19th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com. Let me know what you thought about today's ep. For instance, what was your take on President Garfield's death? What about the Federal Reserve? Do you think that their actions had any bearing on the worst crash of all time? So yeah, let me know what your thoughts are. You can leave it up on the comment board. You can also check out some of the multiple choice quizzes while you're on the website. So good luck with those. And be sure to check out tomorrow's episode. I'll talk about the Amish, the electric cooking range, Battle of Chickamauga, Al Capone, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Leonard Skinner. So don't miss that. In the meantime, you can catch me on Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter handle is JDUSHL. So until tomorrow, thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. See you then.